Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat? We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio. Theatre, film, TV and more. Susie Rong reviews it all on Joy Drive.
Good afternoon, Susie Rong.
Hi, Warren. I think it's an understatement to say that queer people sometimes find it hard to find community. This applies to today's story about Truman Capote, but also to your cruise adventure last week. So we want to know, did you find your tribe on the love boat?
No, I didn't. I didn't, Susie.
They were not your people?
I was there and I had such a busy working week here and privately, and I got on the ship and I was exhausted and I thought, you know what, I'm not going to turn this into a party weekend. I'm going to turn it into a relaxing weekend. So I was like doing yoga classes. I was doing foam rolling classes. I was doing meditation classes. And let me tell you, when you're trying to do a meditation class on a boat, the boat was beautiful and all you can hear is boom, 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 boom from the floor above from all the parties. It's quite challenging, but I did master it by the end of the week. But yeah, it was good. It was, I mean, it does cater for all different types of people, I'll admit. But it is more a party weekend. And I'll tell you something, everyone was like, oh, why are we going to Burnie? And I thought, no, you know what? I'm going to be open-minded. Get off the ship, explore the town of Burnie. And I got off and I spoke to so many local people. And you know what I learned, Susie? That they are so proud of their town. They really are. And there's a lot of stuff like manufacturing buses, all sorts of stuff goes on there. So quite interesting.
So would you say that you need to be a certain kind of queer person to enjoy that cruise?
Probably, I would say so, yeah. I think anyone can enjoy it. I think if you're going to do the quieter side like I chose to do, it's probably better if you go with a group of people because, if people are really partying, of course, you know, they're going to think, oh, he's boring, he's not going to come with us, and then vice versa. So I think if you've got some people there who are of a similar attitude to you at that time, you'll have fun on it. But look, I enjoyed it. I watched movies. I got to see Barbie for the first time because I hadn't seen it. Everyone was raving about it. I saw Oppenheimer, which I've been wanting to see for ages, but I didn't want to go to the cinema because it's 3 hours and I'd need to go to the toilet. So that was great. And the food was amazing. The restaurants were amazing. The boat, the Virgin Boat, is absolutely brilliant. And, of course, the gays party, like you've never seen people party in your life. It was good. Everyone was having fun.
Well, I'm sure you had some fun. Maybe it wasn't perfect for you, but it sounds like you enjoyed a lot of it.
Yeah, I did. And, it was a good opportunity. I've ticked the box. I've been on one of these Atlantis cruises. And, there you go. I'll be flying to Europe next time. Oh.
All right, now we're going to fly back in time. It was the mid-60s, so Truman Capote was probably right in saying that he's the most important American writer alive. Having published the huge hit novels Breakfast at Tiffany's and In Cold Blood, it is no wonder that his head had gotten so big. A bona fide celebrity, Truman runs around town hobnobbing with the creme de la creme of New York City, mixing with high society as though he was born into that life. But as we see in the new series, Feud, Capote versus the Swans, now streaming on Binge. He was an outsider allowed into the inner sanctum, but only for a short time. In Feud, we see Truman completely captivated by the wealthy women of uptown Manhattan, prying himself into their personal lives, discovering all their darkest secrets, and then turning on them, using their stories and exposing their scandals in his writing when he becomes desperate for material. Truman Capote was an early gay icon, one of the few personalities in public life who was open about their queerness. Feud examines the relationship between powerful women and gay men, a dynamic we are familiar with, but not one that is widely understood. There is an interesting parallel in being shut out by the big boys club that draws the two together, but ultimately there are significant differences between gays and their divas, and we see the inevitable fissures happening in Feud. There are, as of today, 3 episodes available to watch. I found the first 2 to be very compelling. Thrilled to be watching glamorous women playing glamorous women. It is a star-studded affair with an impressive list of incredible white women movie stars involved, including Naomi Watts, Demi Moore, Molly Ringwald, Jessica Lange, just to name a few. The 3rd episode takes an abrupt turn in style, suddenly becoming a faux documentary, which I wasn't very convinced by. Truman is played by Tom Hollander, who does a fine job, but probably not as magnificent as Philip Seymour Hoffman or Toby Jones, who had played the same character in movies in the not-so-distant past. Warren, I love watching rich people being miserable, so this series is definitely appealing for me. How do you feel about Feud?
You know what I really liked? Watching rich people have, you know, I suppose, similar issues in their relationships that we all have, really. It doesn't matter how much money you have, you still have the same sorts of issues. I quite enjoyed it. I didn't get to watch all 3 episodes because I was stuck on the boat on the weekend and they didn't have it there, but I was hoping I would. But I did watch some yesterday and today, and I liked it. I think he's a really good storyteller. Like a great storyteller. And I think that's part of the attraction, isn't it, of when you get all these glamorous women hanging around. But Susie, it reminded me of a good friend of mine that I, in my 20s, was really good friends with. And he was very out there, very camp, very extroverted. And he got, I suppose, isolated in some ways from both straight and gay men. And he was always the life at the dinner party, you know, could tell the stories, could captivate a whole audience. And I've never come across someone quite like it, but Truman was sort of similar in that respect. And one day this friend, who shall remain nameless, sort of came up to me and we were having a bit of a deep and meaningful conversation. And he said, you know what? He goes, I just want someone to love me. I just want someone to, I don't want people to be with me because I can tell stories, because I'm the life of the party and, you know, I'm camp and I'm out there. He goes, I want someone to love me, but I feel like no one does. It was so sad, Susie. It was so sad.
Yeah, and in this show, we see, you know, even though Truman Capote had achieved a lot of success and fame, there was just a sense that he just never found anywhere that he belonged, that people were... you know, people considered him amusing and they would invite him to parties because he was a bit of a clown. And then on an intimate level, people were using him simply because he had access. So in that way, I thought it was a good study about a certain kind of queer life, especially from the past. But I'm thinking even today, you know, like, where do we get our community from? And those of us who have it should count ourselves very lucky, because this show reminds me of a time when, you know, when I felt like, oh, if the doors had opened in a slightly different way, I probably would have no one.
You're right. It's a very sort of fragile, it's like sliding doors, isn't it, in some ways?
That's right, because you can see how these rich people welcomed him only, you know, like really conditionally, very, very conditionally. He was there to entertain, he was there to talk about gossip, and you know, he was there to serve something. He was not a friend. And but also, we saw that people of that class kind of didn't know how to have friends as well. I love the flamboyance of it, you know, stylistically, you know, it was very flamboyant, as well as the character being very flamboyant, but there was so much darkness. I found the juxtaposition of the two to be really delicious. It's just really my cup of tea, just be really, really dark and then be really, really camp at the same time. I found it really enjoyable.
I agree with you. I like the way, I mean, he's got a similar value to me, and that is betrayal, particularly, like, the most loyal friend to all my friends, the most loyal person, but I hate being betrayed. And I wouldn't go so far as write a book about someone and reveal their whole personal life just to get back at them. But, you know, I did think, yeah, fair enough. You know, you don't want to be betrayed by your friends, do you? And look out if you do betray a gay man.
Yeah, or Susie it's Wrong. An awkward thing. You don't want to cross me. That's this strange thing where we are trying to figure out, and the show does kind of have some assumptions about his motivations, about his, you know, why he's drawn into that world that clearly is not his world. He was born very, very, very far from that sort of universe, but why he was drawn into that sort of space and the kind of price that he was willing to pay for it. And then, I guess on one level, it looks, because it's in New York City, it feels so distant. But then we think about our own lives as well, like the glamorous things, the shiny objects, the colorful people that we are drawn to, and we want to be loved by them. We want to be accepted by them. And then really, sometimes it's just a futile exercise, isn't it?
Let's talk about, I mean, there's a, you know, they do talk about affairs in the show quite a bit. And I do like the way one woman, I suppose, you know, she gets her revenge on the wife. And I kind of feel for the wife as well. But it's interesting how the rich view the affairs as though it's just a you know, part of life. And Truman's attitude towards it is just rise above it and accept it for the way it is. What do you think, Susie?
Well, I think in that sort of world, you can very clearly see that people stay together for a lot more reasons than love, right? Like, I think when you don't have lots to your name, we don't have a lot of money or property and all that, you run out of love, it's very easy to part ways. Easier to part ways. But when you have so much at stake, when people are cheating on each other, when people fall out of love with each other, you can't just break up because there's so much. Like these women in the 50s and 60s structured their whole lives based on being, you know, a rich man's wife. Like they don't really have things of their own, you know, all they have, and they have so much, you know, it's by association. So it's very hard for them to kind of just simply walk away. I guess they could, but you can feel like, oh, aside from love and respect from the husband, they just want to be the Mrs. So-and-so, and that was such a big part of their lives.
It's interesting. This is a bit of a personal story. I was seeing someone for a couple of years, and then I found out, I thought he was single, then I found out he was actually married a couple of years down the track. And I always felt really guilty after that because I thought, oh, goodness, I'm one of those people that's having an affair with someone. All of a sudden this thing turned from being, I suppose, a dating and a relationship to having an affair. And I felt absolutely guilty. And then, you know, things turned sour between myself and you know, the husband, and got quite nasty in the end. But it was like 2 years down the track and I'd already fallen for this person. So I don't know, I'm a bit funny when it comes to affairs and how they're dealt with. And you know, it's interesting how the rich just gloss over it and rise above it, but I think they're a little bit more murky than that.
Well, in this day and age, monogamy, you know, you can't assume that anymore. I think when you start dating, you must always kind of make very clear whether you are looking for monogamy, you're expecting monogamy, or expecting to develop your relationship into a monogamous one. And you must also have a lot of clarification about their status. You know, are they seeing people? Are they seeing people seriously, casually? And you know, what kind of strings are attached? I think there's so many rules being changed at the moment, and we don't really know. I think it's healthy to be able to have these discussions. You know, traditionally you kind of don't have these discussions.
But
you
kind of retrospectively, upfront, preferably.
Yeah. Back in the day, you're like, oh, are you single? Yes or no, and then that says everything. But these days, you kind of have to make sure, like, if they're not single, what does that mean? And if they're seeing you, where do you expect, and where does the other person expect things to go? You know, these conversations are so important. But I think I think it's one of a healthy transformation to how we do relationships. I think this assumption that everybody wants to do monogamy is very old-fashioned and I don't think very helpful, ultimately.
And I mean, often the person who is, you know, who is on the receiving end of the affair is blamed and demonized for, you know, coming in and ruining the relationship as such. But, you know, often the responsibility is also on the person who initiates it too, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you're single and that person's married, so clearly you didn't make any vow to anybody. It's the other person that's you know, I'm assuming made some vows and then broke them. So really, you know, it's more the fault of that person who had made a commitment and broken it. Because if you're a single person, you're really a single person.
Mm, exactly. Now, one message has just come in saying a lot of community don't have a place or space that is fit for them. As a queer woman of 51 who didn't come out until 33, I never had a group of friends, and relationships have been very hard to come by. I don't fit the binary of butch or femme and the sporty or the party hard types and other subgroups. I suspect my identity is a better fit for millennial lens on gender, born too soon, it seems. That is our best love. I see my next Tuesday folks conversation. Happy Valentine's. Oh, Susie, Happy New Year too. Happy Lunar New Year.
Oh, Happy New Year. May you have great health in the Year of the Dragon and an incredible, unimaginable prosperity for you this coming year.
And no more affairs where we find out afterwards they're already attached.
Just happy affairs. Just happy relationships, you know, that have no drama. Well, unless you like them.
That's right. We are talking about Feud, which you can get on Binge. Susie, what is next week's topic of conversation?
The Mardi Gras Film Festival begins this weekend. One of the most high-profile queer films of the moment is All of Us Strangers, which is screening in the festival, but also at cinemas everywhere if you don't happen to live in Sydney. So I look forward to talking about All of Us Strangers when I see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Susie.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app, no matter where you are.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.